A city is stronger together. So let's hear from the business and community leaders that keep Milwaukee on the upswing. Presented by Horicon Bank, the natural choice for all your banking needs. Now here's the host that's always on the upswing, WTMJ's Jeff Sherman.
Now, to business, gentlemen.
Welcome to the Upswing. I'm Jeff Sherman. A big thank you to Horicon Bank. Happy New Year. Always a festive greeting, isn't it? One that lasts all month long. Make sure that you use it all month long, right? You can say Happy New Year any time of the day, any day of the week, all during January. I give you that authority. We're doing a Best of Upswing edition today. We're going to highlight a few of our favorite conversations from 2025. We'll let you ease into the new year as we continue to look back a little bit on 2025 to make sure that we power forward into the new year with the right direction and with the right amount of energy. Quickly, I wanted to look back at maybe like four of my top stories from last year, just to remind us what we all did as a collective community. And again, as we power forward to 2026. Number one, let's remember and cheer the Brewers' historic run and heartbreak from last year, right? I'm a civic pride guy. The Brewers helped deepen it in 2025 for sure. Franchise record 97 wins, ripping off that 14-game winning streak, capturing a third straight NL Central title. Seventh postseason berth in 8 years. Remember it, cherish it. Even with the loss to the Dodgers, it's something that put that emotion and that civic pride in all of us. Second, I like to highlight downtown's continued momentum. A lot of building, housing, offices, hotels, public realm updates continued to position the central part of our state as the region's economic engine. New projects, new hotel rooms, new riverfront additions, plaza investments, all reinforced what Milwaukee is all about, not only for talent and workforce, but for visitors and convention business. Number three, big bets on culture and venues. Remember the Associated Bank Theater opening that reimagined the home of the Milwaukee Rep? It advances downtown Milwaukee as the marquee cultural center for the entire state. We have new venues and expansions all around the area, too. In the Deer District, you have the Moxie Hotel announcement, and you have Landmark Credit Union Hall. Hasn't opened yet, but cemented downtown as a year-round live entertainment hub. Next up, data centers and next-gen AI economy. Southeastern Wisconsin really emerged as a national data center hotspot in 2025. Now, it will be interesting to see how it all plays out, but the fact that we are in the game, it's going to boost players like Generator, HQ investments from across the area, like Fiserv and Northwestern Mutual. When data centers and big federal projects hone in on us, on our state, there's opportunity for everyone, something to keep an eye on for next year, for sure. Finally, neighborhood connections and public space wins. You always have to cheer these. Projects like the Riverwalk extension in the Harbor District, the relocation and upgrade of the South Shore Beach, trail, street, road improvements all across the area really made our city more connected, more bikeable, more walkable, and that all reinforces community and neighborhood redevelopment, which is incredibly important. Speaking of neighbors, I love talking family business, especially ones that have fun, great tasting products like donuts. So coming up next, we're going to look at some of our best conversations from last year. We'll start it out with Colton Grebe from Grebe Bakery. In September, Colton Grebe from Grebe's Bakeries joined us to talk about donuts, their new store within a store concept, and the legacy of the family recipes at Grebe's, trends in the bakery space, and what he learned at the National Baking Expo. Colton, you are just back from Las Vegas, the big international bakery expo. So you go to these expos. What do you learn there? Like, is it all just taste testing, or are there trends? Is it marketing? Like, what do you do at a Donut Expo.
Yeah, I think this is one of the better ways to get a pulse on the industry right now. And one pulse on our industry right now that people can't, no one can ignore is really consumer preferences, specifically around the idea of healthy foods, right? Yeah. In our global food supply. And obviously, you know, the source of information depends on the information you get back, right? So one of the cool sessions I was in on was actually brought on by the American Bakers Association. And I was really, really happy to see, because on this panel, you had nutritionists, you had lobbyists, you had people really from all sorts of, you know, the industry really coming together and having a conversation. Yeah. And one of the big takeaways, as, you know, as a bakery guy, right? I eat pretty clean, right? Yeah. I eat pretty healthy.
Okay.
But there's that one part of my day, though, right? It's the one part of my day, right? I just want something to taste good, right?
Yeah.
Just let me forget about everything else. Let me eat that one good thing. And us as bakers, you know, the joke is you're seeing, you know, pea proteins and donuts these days. You're right. Seeing a lot of things like that. And you know,
it's all about protein, it seems like. You walk down the grocery aisle and everything is protein infused.
Right? Which,
do you jump on those trends?
Well, you know, I definitely, being an R&D guy, I'm aware of them.
Yeah.
You know, went to school for baking.
Right.
I love formulation. I love looking at that.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I can't ignore is the fact that people will only eat things that taste good when it comes to dessert, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So that permissible indulgence category, you know, is really something we're keen on, and it's something we've really, really stayed focused on.
So from a health concern standpoint, are you seeing that people are looking at the ingredients labels for grams of sugar and asking for, ooh, what about stevia? What about monk fruit? What about those sugar alternatives? Are you sensing that in the marketplace?
Yeah, you know, we are. And I think, you know, we were talking a little bit about most kids' bedtime stories are a little bit different than mine, right? growing up in a family bakery, you know, I remember the Atkins, you know, craze.
Yeah.
I remember low fat. I remember all those things. And I remember my family was pretty like, that'll die off. That'll do this. But I think the local and the recent trends in health, I don't think this is going away. I think this is more of a shift towards, hey, tell me what are the things I can eat that maybe I shouldn't eat a lot of, and then educate me on maybe some of the things that I should never eat, right? And that's where, as a food, as someone who formulates food and recipes, it would be really nice to start understanding that, because there's some smart people that are working in food that we can really start to work around.
I mean, transparency and education, I think, are so very important everywhere in our lives.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone, it's so easy to say, oh, all things in moderation. But, you know, some things you don't want in moderation, right?
Exactly.
You want something better.
Exactly.
And I think when it comes to, I don't know, treats, you want to also know that there's any bad stuff in them. So,
Correct.
Buying stuff that is local and trusted, at least in my world, I appreciate and respect that. So, talking about my world, it's all about me. No. But let's go to my village here and the new, you kind of have a new store within a store concept within Kroger, within the Metro Market. Talk about that process and kind of how it plays into your growth as a company.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what this represents really is, there's a lot of words that come to mind, you know, gratitude, obviously, for teaming up with them, but opportunities. I know that when we first got in talks about this, everybody was really excited across the board because, A, it's a way for a family bakery like ours to continue to expand, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of people in business, when it comes to family business, a lot of it is about just surviving, right?
Right.
So that's a big thing for Greeby's is keeping this legacy alive.
Well, and the thing, Kroger still sells its own donuts at the store, right?
Correct.
But you walk in and it's a big Greeby's neon sign,
right?
And I have that choice.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that choice. And, you know, I always like to say, you know, when we start talking quality, this is the best way I can describe quality in bakery, right? When people think quality, they think of, like, at least I do, I think of a French chef in a Michelin star restaurant, right? It's plated, beautiful, you know, it's probably going to be super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But Greeby's is here to kind of show there's a flip side of that quality, right? Something I like to call grandma's quality, right? It's like you're going to grandma's house for Christmas, you open that door, and it's just like that quality of food just wraps you up and hugs you, right?
Yeah.
It's going to be affordable, it's going to taste good, and it just evokes a feeling. That's the kind of quality that we're going after.
Well, and there's a lot of things on the menu, not only in all your locations, but at the New Shorewood location. Yeah. The kind of the historic crawler is what Greavey's is known for.
Yes.
Talk about that process, the ingredients and the technique, and what, there may be some people listening that don't know what a crawler is. Come on.
Yeah, so it's always the conversation with the crawler specifically. It's like, what experience do I want people to have? Do I want them to eat a donut and say, this is the best donut I ever had? Or do I want them to eat, the crawler and say, like, oh, this is a crawler? This is really good, right? So we're going back and forth on that. But, you know, the beautiful thing about the crawler, you know, we go back to grandma's quality. There is not one of our donuts that are going to look the same, right? It's that handcrafted, time-tested quality that we're going after. But what's really cool behind the scenes with the crawler that not a lot of people know is that if there's some bakery nerds out there listening, how we make crawlers is not how anybody else in the country makes a donut. And I know that because I've been in some big bakeries before. We've seen how it's done. We have all custom equipment that we use to make it, you know, to finish it. There's a lot of ingenuity that we do with that product.
All right. Yeah, it's a staple for sure. And there's truly something just special and unique about them. You listen to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. In May, we were joined by Marquette University President Dr. Kimo Ayun and Marquette's first ever Chief Wellness Officer, Luis de Zingotinha. We talked about mental health, wellness, and how it makes the higher education investment even more valuable. So, Luis, you are pretty much new to Milwaukee, new to Marquette. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, yeah. Yeah, it's been such a blessing to come to this community to get this amazing job. I pinch myself every day I come to work. I'm coming from the Twin Cities, where I had worked for 5 years at University of St. Thomas at a similar integrated health center. We had three legs of the stool. We had kind of a public health group, a medical clinic, and a counseling center. This group's added recreation to that mix, and it's just an amazing opportunity to really build healthy habits for students, help them be well, and live up to kind of the cura personalis value of our Jesuit institution. Before that, I was 15 years in Boston, so okay. I went to Boston College for grad school. It was great school. I got an MBA and a master's in social work. I knew I wanted to be in service organizations. I worked at Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, which is a hospital that really supports academic cancer care, and worked on helping building clinics, helping building outreach in the community to expand their mission. And that kind of sense of supporting vulnerable people, helping individuals, was a great opportunity for me to grow professionally. I got to be an adjunct professor back at Boston College, teaching a little bit about planning for health and mental health and also financial management and nonprofits. And that's where I had one leg in kind of education, another one in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And that's what led me to St. Thomas and ultimately here, where I can continue that work.
All right. That's great. Yeah. So you've really been able to see it from the patient side, from the student side, from the community side, and understand all angles.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. You can't only treat the individual. You have to build a campus and a community wellness strategy that facilitates wellness, that helps people build healthy habits, helps people connect, and really feel like they belong. And that's what I really appreciate about Marquette. They're really taking a multi-pronged approach. All the faculty, all the staff, all the community members are focused on building a web of support for students, helping them build healthy habits, and this concept of resilience. Because let's face it, there's a lot of challenges in the world today, and we need to build our students' ability to weather those storms.
Yeah. Dr. Ayun, as hiring Luis as the first permanent chief wellness officer at the university, obviously opening the Wellness and Health Recreation Center is an important step. Why did you want to create this position, and kind of how does it all come together under your vision?
Yeah, larger picture is we want to transform the lives of our students to create men and women for and with others. And in order to do that, we need to make sure they're successful through all 4 years and to finish at Marquette and graduate. And the question we asked ourselves is, if we're serious about wellness of our students, which we are, who gets up every single day and first thing on their mind is, what will I do today to make our students healthier? there. And so that's the creation of this program, a national search. It brings Louise to us, and we feel we finally have the pathway that we need to get to everything that we want to build a complete student.
Yeah. It's been a while since I was a student at Marquette, but I look back. I mean, there was a lot of resources. You have fitness classes, coaching, clinical care, faculty memberships, or faculty mentorship. But now it's kind of next level, and I think it's something that parents almost expect their students to have access to. So talk, Luis, a little bit about opening the Wellness and Health for Recreation Center. It opened in the spring semester. What's the reception been like, and what's it like to just have a kind of a brand new modern facility?
I mean, it's been nothing short of remarkable. The students clearly wanted this and are gravitating towards it. You know, we've had over 7,000 of our 11,000 students enter the space. And when you look at undergrads, almost 80% of them have come and used the facility, which is great for a four-month period. My mission is to get that to 100%, making sure every student knows that they can come to us for their wellness, build healthy habits, and we're there for them if they're in a crisis. If to put it in numbers, we had 180,000 swipes the entire year. I mean, we had 180,000 swipes this semester. Over the entire year, we had 250,000 the year before. So that's 90% growth. But what's important to me is it's 40% more unique students in that short period. So how can we get every student to build those healthy habits? The more students who embrace Cure Personalis, take care of mind, body, and spirit, hopefully the less of them from a population level will need our crisis services.
Yeah. So, Dr. Ayoun, this reimagined facility kind of brings together all wellness services under one roof. And I always say, like, this isn't fluff. Like, these aren't programs and resources for students that it's just exercise and yoga. But there's so much more to bringing everything under one umbrella to really provide that one-stop shop for everything that you need for your mental health.
Yeah, we talk about Cura Personalis at Marquette. That's the care for the whole person. And physical health is one sort of way you take care of yourself, but there's also the mental piece that is extremely important. And when our students leave, we want them to leave with lifelong habits. We want them to lead a fulfilled life and be able to pass those on to their children and the other people that they come into contact with. And so that's the first part, is just how do you develop those healthy habits at a younger age that they carry with them forever. But the second piece about it is taking away the stigma. So too often you put, you know, counseling on one end of campus and the workout facilities on another end of campus. But when we say is we put all of those in the one place, whether or not it's addiction recovery or mental health or your medical health or your physical health, you put it all in one place. And you would say, these are all the many ways to be able to take care of yourself. Come here and we will help you to do that.
Yeah, definitely a new era for health and wellness at all universities. And when we come back, I'm going to continue our discussion around student wellness spaces. And if this approach is kind of part of a bigger movement at universities and higher education to add to the landscape, to really be a recruitment driver for new students. This is The Upswing. You're listening to WTMJ. So many changes in AI. Matt Kirkner, president of Lab Midwest and the host of the Tech Ed podcast, is a true manufacturing leader, global speaker, global thinker on preparing the workforce for the next generation, specifically in the age of AI. We asked Matt, how do you make sure that AI isn't taking our jobs? We're all seeing stories every day about how do you AI-proof your career? And I saw this quote from the CEO of Amazon Web Services, Matt Garman. Matt said, critical thinking and creativity could matter more than technical skills in hiring during the age of AI. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that, whether you agree, and how do we actually teach those skills now that everyone's so focused on the tech of it all?
Absolutely. So the first thing, do I agree with that quote? I would say I agree with it in part, not in sum total. You know, you think about the kind of jobs that exist at a company like Amazon Web Services, and if you take a look, you find jobs like, you know, cloud solutions architect or a machine learning engineer. You know, those are great jobs. Those are jobs that can pay hundreds of thousands of dollars a year. Certainly creativity, certainly critical thinking are important in jobs like that. But I'm going to guess if I submit a resume for one of those jobs and I say, I don't know anything about cloud systems architecture, but I'm really, really creative and I totally understand critical thinking, guessing maybe I'm not getting that job, right? So it's an and, not an or. Yes, we need to be creative. Yes, we need to be good critical thinkers. We also have to have skills. And especially in this day and age of artificial intelligence, I think people are right to be a little bit concerned about the disruption that's coming, because we're already seeing artificial intelligence disrupting the world of work. The best antidote, is to prepare yourself with AI skills and understand how artificial intelligence is going to disrupt your world of work. We like to say AI isn't going to take your job, but somebody using artificial intelligence might. And if you don't take the time to learn how AI is going to disrupt the world of work, then your job might be the one that ends up on the chopping block. So the truth is, this isn't anything to be scared of. It's not anything to be afraid of. But we are going to be living in a world of lifelong learning where it's not enough to just get a degree, get a certificate of some sort, and have a job for 30 or 40 years. Our jobs are going to change every single year, and the people that are embracing this technology, are learning about it, are understanding how to deploy it at work and at home, are the people that are going to end up ahead. Those people don't have anything to worry about. The people who are going to sit and watch the world pass them by, they in fact do have a little bit to worry about.
So let's bring AI into the schools, not only in higher education, but even on the elementary level. I think a couple years ago, teachers were saying, no AI in the classrooms.
Right.
It's cheating. It is flat out cheating. How can students best tap into the platforms now on all levels?
Yeah, so I think the first thing is that, first when we saw AI coming into the classroom, there was a lot of worry, there was a lot of concern on the part of teachers. It was a tool that students could use to write essays, to do their homework, to solve problems. None of that is going away. The truth of the matter is, though, we can't be scared of AI in the classroom either. And those teachers that are trying to outlaw it or to say that, you know, you've got to sign a contract that you can't use it, that world isn't going to be the world that our students are living in. We are doing them a disservice if that's the philosophy we take. Instead, we have to realize that in the old days, school was the place that we went to learn, and home was the place that we went to practice. We would go home to do our homework, write our essays, study for our exams. In this day and age and going into the future, that is going to completely flip. The truth of the matter is that, yes, any student can use generative artificial intelligence to complete a homework assignment. We're not going to prevent them from doing that. There's no good way to police it. Instead, why don't we embrace that? And why don't we say, okay, you can go home and do your studying at home, do your learning at home. You can learn on e-learning. You can learn by looking at a lecture. You can learn on TikTok. You can learn on YouTube Shorts. I mean, there's so many different places we can go to gather information and educate ourselves. School's going to be the place where we go to practice, where our teachers are going to challenge us to think in a different way, are going to ask us about the meaning of what we just read, are going to ask us to do a hands-on skill, hands-on project, group project, interactive opportunity to do things with other students, work-based learning, internships. That's the future of education. So we do see a lot of educators that are trying to stand up all these rules around the use of artificial intelligence and prohibit it. I think that's a fool's errand. The question is, how do we embrace this technology, use it in the classroom in a way that's going to make our students career ready when they're done with their education?
Well, in that way, it's going to work even better because it helps us become even more deeper curious about what we care about.
100%.
And then if we can curate that, all the better. And that's how you AI-proof your career.
I agree 100%.
So let's take it to the job seeker level. LinkedIn recently had a study that real-life connections are more trusted than AI device.
Right.
AI advice. What's your advice for job seekers now? Maybe someone just out of college, they see all these platforms, they see, wow, here's an opportunity to curate all these jobs. But how do you mirror it with the real life connections?
Yeah, absolutely. So, first of all, I agree with the premise that the interpersonal relationships are still going to rule the day in the age of artificial intelligence. Perhaps might even be even more important because we do have to determine who and what to trust. So, I think that part of it is really important. I think we're seeing a sea change in the area of work. A great article in the Wall Street Journal maybe a week and a half ago or so, 2 weeks ago, where employers are starting to get away from some of the AI generated interviews, where you just have a student sit down in front of their camera camera and answer questions, because the student or the candidates, I should say, were using generative AI to answer the question. You use voice to text, and you text right into ChatGPT, for example. It gives you the perfect answer, and you read it right back. That's AI interviewing AI.
That's
but
right,
you know,
yes.
How are you going to find great people? What employers are starting to do is recognize, all right, we've got to take an individual. We've got to put them in an interview situation. We have to ask them some tougher and challenging questions, maybe not the questions that they're expecting, to really get a sense for who that person is. So I think that's good news for job seekers in this day and age. Mm-hmm. We've all heard the horror stories or the challenges of being, you know, getting a rejection letter in the form of an AI written note that comes from some platform after you submitted a resume. That's not doing anybody any favors. But those interpersonal skills are going to be more and more important. And for a generation that suffered through COVID during their formative years and maybe didn't have all those in-person experiences when they were in high school, when they were in college, that those are that much more challenging. And we have to make sure that we're challenging ourselves to build in those interpersonal skills, building interpersonal relationships, because that will be more important than anything else in the age of AI.
That's what we were taught in business school.
Indeed.
The art of networking. Networking may be an outdated term a little bit, but it's still about the power of connection.
100%. And then we both had great examples of that, of people that have played a huge part in our careers and pointed us in the right direction, gave us an opportunity maybe we didn't deserve at the time, but because we had a big enough heart and enough energy and the why was important enough that you get that opportunity to shine, those relationships are going to be as important as ever.
We're talking with Matt Kirchner from Lab Midwest and the Tech Ed Podcast. You're listening to The Upswing. This is WTMJ. Finally, another conversation I really enjoyed, because this show, we're about greater Milwaukee. A lot of development going on between the Milwaukee and Madison corridors. We talked to the people that are making it happen. Michael Lucky, the Jefferson County Administrator, and Deb Reinbold, President of Thrive Economic Development, joined us to explain why business is booming along I-94. So as you look at competition for development, every region kind of wants what it wants, right? And ultimately, there has to be collaboration to win. But how do you view competition across the state of Wisconsin, Michael?
Well, what we have going for us in Jefferson County when we try and compete and highlight our strengths is we have land that can be probably acquired for cheaper than maybe some areas of our neighbors. We have a very, very skilled workforce. We have educational institutions. And we do have that community spirit, between all of our communities that will help attract some of this development. To spin it a little bit, though, because you're talking, you know, competition, but there is that collaboration piece regionally, right? And so we recognize that what might be happening in Dane County and Waukesha County and Milwaukee County does have some type of effect on Jefferson County itself. We've got an Amazon distribution facility going up in Cottage Grove that'll bring 1,700 jobs to that area. We're going to probably see some housing and some retail spillover effects because of that. The growth that's happening from the corridor from the Illinois border up to Milwaukee, that also is going to lead to some spillover effects. And so things like, you know, We Energies still supplies power to us, even if it supplies it to the city of Milwaukee and those areas. And so if they're able to grow that capacity there, that might have some effects for some of the energy capacity and availability that we can then draw on towards Jefferson County, too. There are a lot of benefits to seeing this region as a whole grow. And what that Madwaukee corridor that we talked about earlier really helps display and grow is Milwaukee has historically had a very, very strong manufacturing background, a lot of strength and knowledge that comes in that area. Madison has the university, a lot of IP, technology, things like that. But as those sectors and those lines are becoming more and more blurred, having a corridor that connects both of those knowledge bases is very important. And so we see ourselves really as growing as part of this region. Maybe we have to compete with other states, but if we're talking about growth in southeastern Wisconsin, Jefferson County is right at the heart of it.
Yeah, I think there has to be a bit of a rise and tide lifts all boats mentality. I started a smaller business that grew in downtown Milwaukee. I always say that we wouldn't have survived if we weren't this close to Chicago, because we had access to the agencies, we had access to huge sponsorship deals, and it was really quick for us to get back and forth. But the reality is, Deb, when you're recruiting What if somebody decides, all right, we're going to Pleasant Prairie over Whitewater? Like, does your heart just sink, or are you like, whoa, okay, let's find the right angle with this?
Yeah, there's a little kumbaya there. So I'm friends with the people over at Cava too. I cheer for them all the time. And I got to tell you, back and forth, we share resources. So it's a friendly rivalry. But I think a win for us is a win for the region, to your point.
Yeah, very good. What do you see and expect as you look into the rest of 2025? What do those opportunities look like, Michael?
Well, we do have one exciting announcement that really was finalized and announced this year in Onego Bio. It's a Finnish company that's going to be investing $300 million in a flagship manufacturing operation in Jefferson in the Food and Beverage Innovation Campus. What they do is they have a product called Bioalbumin. It's a patented product that is identical to the same protein you find in egg whites, but you can make it through fermentation. They don't want to substitute egg whites, but they do want to supplement it and provide some supply chain stability when it comes to egg prices. There's a lot of interest in what that could do for commercial bakers and large entities, even like the U.S. military, having a good, stable source of egg white protein that can help with baked goods and things like that.
A lot of applications and benefits, for sure, and it ties into what the region's all about historically. That's got to be a huge win.
It is, and it's in the Food and Beverage Innovation Campus, we call it, and we call it that for a reason. I was talking earlier, some of this, you know, food and beverage manufacturing, but there has to be some type of research, growth, new technologies, and so to put that directly in the center of our Food and Beverage Innovation Campus, I can't wait to see what that means going forward for the region.
Very I should good. Also mention, we do still have about 40 acres that are available within that park. So right along Keekaman Way is the road. Keekaman Way is the road that drives through the middle of that park.
Okay. And finally, we talked a bit about kind of point of difference and collaboration. But when you look to contrast with what other states are doing, what do you dive in terms of the benefits for the Madwaukee corridor that makes it different than Ohio or Indiana? Like, why Wisconsin?
So that's really going to be specific to that user. And so if the user is saying, hey, we're looking for utility, low cost for utility, or we're looking for stable utilities. I mean, if you go some places, you know, their power gets turned off every now and then. There's brownouts. That's what the word I was looking for. Mm-hmm. Right. So it really depends on that company, if they're also looking for workforce. I mean, between UW-Madison, to your point earlier, technical colleges, there's a lot of education that's happening right now in order to bring out a workforce that can support their business. So it really is just listening to them and finding out what their needs are.
Yeah. Michael.
But I think every business is looking for speed, right? And so what we can offer because of collaboration with the state of Wisconsin and our local municipalities is some proactive approach to get these sites ready, or at least some knowledge of where they are, what their capacities are, and what they can support. Because people want certainty, and they don't want to have to wait for approvals and supply chain for, you know, infrastructure issues and stuff like that. They want to be able to build on their timeline. So the state of Wisconsin's been proactive. We've been proactive. And we have a fantastic labor pool. Jefferson County, we talk about like a 45-minute drive time. We're reaching 1.1 million people. A lot of your listeners, you know, you could be in Jefferson County in 45 minutes, not only working there, but enjoying a lot of the great stuff we have to offer for a day trip. So we definitely invite you to come on out and check it out.
How I drive, I can be there in like 30 minutes, but don't tell anyone that. We'll be right back. I'm Jeff Sherman. This is The Upswing, and we are proudly presented by Horicon Bank. Finally, let's do some predictions and a quick resolution from one of our favorite guests last year. Next week on the show, one of our favorite regular guests, Beth Ridley, will join to discuss workplace trends for 2026, specifically how supporting HR and executive teams who want to help managers who are technically strong but are struggling a bit with the interpersonal skills. It's a big part of her focus for 2026, and I think one that we can all learn from. I'm excited to talk to Beth. We'll get her New Year's resolution and predictions as well. Last year, Ted Lukash, a consulting partner at the Era Group, joined us a couple times on the show. I asked Ted for his resolution, and I thought it was amazing, something to take to heart. Ted told me this. He said, Jeff, in 2026, I want to close the gap between where I've been and where I'm going by circling back to old friends, trusted clients, and people I've mentored, because the return on relationships never depreciates. That is an amazing resolution. I'm going to steal that one from you, Ted. I think we all should if we want to continue to build community and more in the new year. Quickly, to round out the show here, three predictions for 2026 from the Upswing desk, if you will. Number one, digital, mobile, and multi-location sports betting is going to find its way in Wisconsin. Legislation moving through the state capitol now. Fits and starts for sure, because you got to figure out how all that revenue is allocated. Prediction markets and apps are coming fast and furiously, and they're going to disrupt the space they already have. Wisconsin's got to figure out how to best take its chunk of that revenue, work with the tribes, work with the national players, and find our place in the sports betting world. It's a crazy space for sure, but there's a lot of opportunity, a lot of challenges, but I think we're going to figure it out. Next, I predict that Harley roars back to its roots. The new president and CEO at Harley-Davidson is Artie Starrs. I've heard from a few community leaders already that there's a drive to further anchor to its hometown, and that's really important. Harley's planning to rehab and update its buildings at its historic Milwaukee headquarters already. It's seeking to defray some of those costs with some historic tax credits, anchoring to its past and anchoring at its roots here in Milwaukee, I think is going to help the brand. Finally, I think more national restaurant chains are going to find greater Milwaukee in 2026. They're going to take advantage of available sites, kind of the constantly changing consumer environment. Brands that looked at Milwaukee in 2025, you had Raising Cane's, you had Dave's Hot Chicken, Forage Kitchen expanded in the area, Taco Pros. Meanwhile, you look at Paris Baguette, Zaxby's, and others who already are saying they're going to open up. Local independents, there's some challenging times in the restaurant business right now, but growth and change is coming. Milwaukee's a dining town. With closings come openings. That's the circle of life, the circle of community. I love it and I appreciate it. But I think more and more nationals are going to start looking at our market because they sense opportunity. No matter what, get off the sidelines this new year. Support your community and all it has to offer.